Chapter 10 At the Supper Dance. "What?" George said. "Is it too serious? That the boat?" Toe gets in the butter, toe ging zijn water over de hecht die buts. "What the nerd is going to happen when we get fun out a wow or yonder with the boat?"
Nah.
"I am serious, George," Robbie said. "Listen, we get Arthur ready here at the house, then cycle down to the dance for a start, disappear after a hour and come back up here. We can get in the boat and row across to the beach at the Ha. It'll not take us that much longer cycling either way around, and we can carry more gear, and there'll be room for anything that we might find there. We'll still be back before the headmas dance." He kent it was a monster of a risk being half of the boat without his folk kennen in at night and when they should be at the dance, but he kent it was our muckle of adventure to no do it. "If we get catched, we'll never be allowed out of the house again," Kirsty said, half gaffing. She could see what he was getting at. It was a bit scary. "Say what, we'll just know how to get catched then. Come on, what thank you?" George and Kirsty couldn't but agree with Robbie. It was the only sensible plan. In no time they were gotten together nearly all the gear that they were thought they would need and laid it out upon the bedroom floor. They tackled everything after the last as they could. 3 blankies, the map, Kirsty's copy of the guttock, a shovel and gear and trowel, a packet of biscuit and chocolate, and warm clays. George was going to pick up his own litter. They kent they were a nyog rot doing at the noost already. Their life jackets was hanging up at the shade and their rubber boots was at the porch. Robbie thought it might be an idea to bring a ladder with them, for they would have room at the boat for it, and it might come in handy if they were needing to climb anyway around the Doe's cave. After sorting it out, they realised they were nae why they would have gotten it with them upon their pikes, so it made them think even mair that tacking the flat bottom was the very best way to ging. They left everything in Robbie's room ready to pick up when they came back to the house. "Okay," Robbie said, "yon's about we can do, you know. We just had to gather up 20 things for the shade and tack them down to the boat when we come back." "Later. I'm looking forward to it. I wonder what we'll find."
"I wonder. It's probably exciting," George said, beaming.
"I think I'll head home for a grain of tea and then you can stop by up your way down the road and we'll cycle to the dance. I hear a rucksack that we can use to carry everything. Foo about that?"
"What about it if we meet up about 8, said Robbie. "There's nae point in us getting to the hall over early. They might make us sell raffle tickets."
"Yeah, that'll be fine," George said. "I hear 20 things I can gather up to tack with us. We can pick it up when we head back up the road for the hall. I canna wait." Robbie and Kirsty both thought that sounded good. George headed off home and they set them in at the kitchen table where their mother was setting out the tea things. They ate a grain, but none of the pair of them seemed to have muckle appetite. They were that excited about what lay ahead that night. Their mother commented on how little they'd eaten, but they just said they were been eating sweeties and crisps that afternoon and with the warm weather they weren't that hungry. Time seemed to drag, but at last 7:30 came and their folk was ready to head out the door.
"Yon's was after the hall now, bairns. Will you just make your own way doing on your bikes?"
said their mother. "Yeah," Kirsty said, "we'll be doing in a pretty start. George is going to come doing with us too."
"Oh yeah, we'll see you doing there then," her mother said as she got out the door. "Dunna be over late now."
It was a fine, warm, cloudless night as the pair of them set off on their bikes. The sun was still a piece up at the loft and they weren't a breath of wind either as what was in their faces was cycling. As they went to the togs, George heard the yoke of the brakes on Kirsty's bike as they drew up. He was at the door afore they went off of their bikes with an old, battered rucksack fairly stented full upon his back.
"Gee whiz," Robbie said, "Gavin, where did you get yon rucksack fae? Indiana Jones?"
"Yeah, that's right," said George. "He comes to be a friend of ours. I'm just a while to stow it in the shade for later, then we'll ging." In nae time, they were off down the road, mislings freewheeling over the brig and lang to the hall. The car park was brawly full by this time and the dance underway. The fine night, the muckle door was open, so they heard the music coming out well afore they got there, along with a lock of hooking. They packed their bikes round the back of the hall and wandered in the main door. They were a brass screed of folk at the dance, and as they went to the inner door, they could see they were echt some reel just finishing off. "Now, bairns," said Walter Laurenson on the door, "what will it be for you lot, then? Let me see. I do £20 apiece." Walter was aye on the door, and he made the same joke every time too. But he was a fine and young creature. The three of them gaffed out of politeness. "My fun, bairns, your folk has paid for you." Walter's gaffing followed them as they boxed their way through the pretty hall, saying hello to Misling's abody as they could. Up at the bar, George and Robbie asked for lemonade, and Kirsty got a fizzy apple juice. Then they moved away to the corner, where they weren't a second of Calishan. The next dance was just starting, a St. Bernard's waltz, so the noise kind of eased off a grain, unless for a table next to the bar, where a dozen older boys were sitting, sheeksing and gaffing away. "Fu langer began to bite, Dan," George asked, glipping his drink. "I dinna ken," said Robbie. "We dinna want it to be hour late afore we leave. What about after the next three dances? Then we'll loft and king." "Yeah, that sounds like a plan," George said, and Kirsty nodded too. The next half hour just ogled by, for they were that keen to win away. They were twarty eens there for their class at the Sparkway, but they didn't gae away anything about what they were planning. George got hauled up for the strip the willow be his auntie, although he wasn't that thin with the idea. But he managed to buckle his way through it, nearly can old Jessie half her feet with his birling as she smoothed by. Once it was finished, he got another lemonade for the bar and set him down with Robbie and Kirsty, pech and reebs of sweat running off of his face. "I didn't think that I could do yon dance," he said. "I still don't think to can," Robbie said, with him and Kirsty gaffing. "I think to burled with as many men as women." "I did not," George protested. "They're our money fucking yon Fleming dance, so after the next dance we'll head off. Is that still the plan?" "Yeah, I think so," Robbie said. "After the next thing." He could see Kirsty thinking about something, and he hoped that she wasn't going to get cold feet. "Would it not be better to leave in the middle of a dance, when everybody's up at the floor, rather at the end, when everybody's sitting down? It would be easier to sneak away with it, no," she suggested. Robbie nodded. "Yeah, that's a better idea, Kirsty. That's what we'll do." She whispered, "My heart is beating fast." "Mine too," said George, realising that in 20 minutes they would be up at their bikes and up the road, then heading to the Ha. It was feeling barely real to them now. There were a gathering of folk by the floor as everybody got ready for the next dance, and it seemed to be taking a start to get going. The band leader was directing the folk about. "Three mere couples, we're needing three mere couples for the quadrilles," came the voice of the speakers. "Three mere, no, twa mere couples, no, come on, no, folk, twa mere couples." The three of them was trying to keep a low profile at the back of the hall, seeing twa the sets up of the floor with their hands up looking for another couple before they could start. "Oh no, no, the quadrilles," George said, staring at the floor. "It takes about 4 years to finish. Please, nobody drag any was up or we'll never get away." "George, there's thy auntie coming this way," hissed Kirsty, seeing her at the far end of the hall. "Oh no," George said, still looking at his feet. "Is she?" "One mere couple, thank you," came the voice for the stage. "Just one mere couple." His auntie was only twa table lengths away when the band leader saved the day. "That's full sets, no thank you. So here we go with the quadrilles." They started off with the usual chord, the da, and away with the music and the dancers. George looked up and saw his auntie winking at them and pointing at her watch, meaning she'd maybe get him after. He gave a long breath. "That was class," he said. With the dance well underway and the couples galloping up and down the length of the hall, Robbie turned to the other twa, kenning this was their moment to leave. "Okay, let's get on our way." But they were just one to their feet when Robbie felt a hand upon his shoulder and turned round to see his mother standing there. "Now you three, afore you set off out, or whatever you're thinking to do, we're haying the supper after this dance is finished, and you lot can ging round with the sandwiches and fancies." "What?" said Robbie, hardly believing their bad luck. "But Mam!" "But Mam nothing, Robbie," his mother said. "Come you, it'll no take lang. There is the range of the kitchen in you." Again. "But Mam nothing, Robbie," his mother said. "Come you, it'll no take lang. There is the range of the kitchen in you ready to gang." This was a disaster. Their mother disappeared back into the kitchen and they stood looking at one another. "I can't be so keen after the last dance and no dissing," Robbie said. "Brawley vexed at the time they were lost, and I cannot believe I've been robbed into this." "I can," said George, shaking his head. "Can we not just do a runner now?"
because the sugar had their nae point in that. That would be even mair obvious. We'll just have to get this mate out as fast as we can, then get away.
Right, Robbie said to him. As soon as the music stops, we'll grab a tray of piece of whist for the kitchen and gang round with him. It'll no take that long.
They sat down outside the kitchen door for what felt like the longest 15 minutes of their lives, and eventually the dance came to an end and the folk started to clear the floor. Afore the pretty hall got over busy, the three of them was up with their feet and into the hit kitchen, where on every flat surface was trays of soup and polystyrene cups, sandwiches, bannocks with flesh, cups for tea and trays of fancies. At the far end of the cooker, there were pots ramping and kettles snistering, filling the room with steam and the smell of lentil soup. In among it all was half a dozen women bussing about, filling pirrier kettles for mucklings and handing them over to the helpers with details of what was in them, and trays of meat being passed over heads and out the door, the place full spicking. There were nae doubt the women was in charge, the men just the lob lolly boys.
Now, yon's black tea, yon is sugarless, and this in was sugar, said one wife. This is corned beef this end, and tuna in the middle, and cheese and pickle at the far end, said another, handing over a tray of sandwiches. Tak this jug of milk with you, and there plenty of flesh left for awning at once, said some another, and afore lang it was Robbie, George, and Kirsty's turn to tak trays of bannocks and sandwiches and head round the hall. When they went out the kitchen door, Robbie turned to them.
Quick as you can now, get this trays emptied, and then we'll set off.
Robbie good EY and Kirsty the Idder, as George made for the Piri Hall, for he kent he would shift the lock there we had in standing about.
With that money folk and with them moving fast, they weren't lang getting their trays emptied, and what George had left he just dumped about the table while the older boys was sitting. They met again in the kitchen. They set down the empty trays and turned tail afore anybody either could nab them to ging around with the fancies. They were that money folk there they weren't naughty sneaking away.
Kirsty said she was gandin' up to the toilet afore they could, so they agreed they would meet at their bikes.
Robbie went round the corner, lifted his bike for the wah, and set him upon it. He was surprised when first round the corner was Kirsty.
"Where's George?" she asked, looking.
"I dunno ken," Robbie said. "I thought he was out to hunt me."
"Oh no, dunna say he's had to ging around with me or mate. We canna wait. Oh, here he comes now."
Robbie sat outline on coming round the gable end of the hall, kind of half running. He was carrying something, and as he came closer, they saw it was a pocket full of sandwiches.
"See's do," he said, hiding the bag up and giving them a mockle wink.
"Good thinking, George," Kirsty said. "Who did you sneak them out?"
"Nae bother," he said, beaming.
"They were that muckle gaan on, nobody noticed me. Come on, let's go."
They made sure the coast was clear before they took off. There were a myriad of folk outside the front door with a fine night, gaffing and funning. Some came out the side door for the bar with a black bag clinking full of bottles to put to the skip, and as they cycled away they heard the band play Happy Birthday to some, fading out as they rounded the brig and disappeared up the road. It was a piece colder than it was been earlier, but was still a fine clear night. They weren't a clue to the sky, so still plenty of light, both of the west where the sun was no langin doon, and out the top of the huggin to the east, the full moon was brightening. But the three of them hardly noticed. The excitement of what lay ahead of them was all that filled their minds. They were pecking by the time they went up the hill to George's, blithe to a pretty breather. With a still night, they could hear the douse, douse, douse of the bass guitar doon at the hall.
"Okay," George said, with a rucksack hunched over his shoulders. "Yon's me. Let's mak for the ha'."